This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Girls on Porn. I'm Rachel.
I'm Laura.
And we love porn.
This is our porn review podcast.
We talk about what we love and we roast what we hate.
Helping you find hot, ethical, just plain better porn for your spank bank.
And we're looking at everything.
Today we are joined by a very special guest. Welcome, Essex Noir.
Hello, hello.
Wee.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, like the stripper sound. Pew.
Yeah, exactly. For our listeners who are not familiar, Essex Noir is a self-proclaimed thought leader, leading the conversation on the intersection of sex work and sex tech. Essex is the vice president of Women of Sex Technology. Essex has created a podcast, Thought Leader Pod, in an attempt to hack the conversation on sex, love, dating, and tech. Creating more empathy in digital space is the key to intimacy. Essex is from Missouri, very into Frank Sinatra and adult animation. Essex aims to destigmatize the conversation regarding sex in the digital space. Wow. Thank you so much for coming on the pod because you're a perfect goddamn fit.
Yeah, basically. That's what I thought. I know we've been trying to do it for a minute now. So I'm happy we made it happen.
I know. Yes. How has your 2020 been?
Oh, God.
Like, what have you been up to?
It's honestly one of the best and worst years of my life. The best as far as like reflection and understanding and patience and connecting. And the worst as far as just isolation. You know, I don't think humans are made to be isolated. So in that sense, it sucks. But I am blessed and highly favored, as we say in the South.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. I've kind of had a similar answer where I'm like, it's terrible. I mean, 2020 is terrible. Like, there's no refuting that. But at the same time, I feel like there's something major that we're all going through. I mean, even like putting aside global and political transitions that I'm hoping are happening in a positive sense. Like, I think we're all like being forced to dig deep, and it can be necessary to do that sometimes, as much as it's like painful and horrible to be alone all the time. Oh,
really,
God.
Really forced to look at yourself, you know?
Yeah, you absolutely are.
Yeah, it's a lot. So talk to us a little bit about the intersection of sex and tech.
All right.
Let's talk about
boil it down.
Let's boil it down.
What I do. So I am Essex Noir, as mentioned, the thought leader of sex technology, and that is THOT. I work on the intersections within sex work. So I am just pretty much obsessed with sex tech. And so a quick intro to sex technology. Everyone's like, well, what's sex tech? And the reality is, it's just like fintech. You've probably navigated it personally on so many levels. And in reality, it is education and health, right? So we can talk about fertility, we can talk about sex ed, we can talk about, you know, erectile dysfunction pills, we can talk about all of these kind of health and medical aspect of it and education aspect of it. Then we also have entertainment, which is what we're talking about, which is the porn, which is the good stuff, the fun stuff, you know, the entertainment element of sexuality. And then on the other side, we have arts and culture, business, technology, all these other aspects to the entire industry. So my main focus came into play. I have navigate the sex work industry quite deeply, and I have a lot of friends who are in the sex work industry, and so I absolutely just love whores so much. And I moved to New York City in like 2017, and I found myself just kind of gravitating toward those in the adult industry and just loving the women that I was meeting. You know, they were the most entrepreneurial, resilient, just celebratory people I've ever met, and I'm like, who are these people? And I like love them. And as we're talking, you know, I there's all these little strange things that happen with us, as in like social media and advertising and all these different things that, like, as civilians, you don't have an issue with, but as a sex worker, you did. And so I began learning about concepts like shadow ban and working online and all these different things that deeply impacted sex workers in digital space. And I saw that there were so many, not only social issues around stigma and shame, et cetera, but there's political things that are rooted within America's America's legislation that actively hurts sex workers and those in the sex industry.
Yeah.
And so from there, I started looking at these sex tech platforms. I started making, you know, being very vocal about sex worker rights, especially in digital space. And I started being very vocal about legislation and police funding that basically funded violence against sex workers. And so my work intersects between activism, of course. I think almost everyone was an activist in some way. Just the simple injustices that happen. So the work that I focus on now is, yes, my activism. But within sex technology, I'm the vice president of the Women of Sex Tech. We are an organization of femme identifying people who are navigating the sex tech industry. And so my focus really is on destigmatizing, demystifying, and just, you know, literally that demystifying the conversation around sex tech, you know?
Yeah.
It's not this big mystery. We all get on Tinder. We all get on social media. We all, you know, we've ordered
watch
our birth
porn.
Control.
Yeah.
We've all watched fucking porn, okay?
Right?
And so porn, when everyone thinks about sex tech, I think their first thing is porn, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, yes.
Yeah.
And the digital aspect of porn, which is what we're talking about today, topic we'll talk about today. And then there's the physical aspects of porn too. And so I like to just talk about all of those things, but then labor rights and entertainment and just social rights and all those awesome subjects.
I have like about a bajillion questions I want to ask you about like, because I also, I like when I think of sex tech too, I think not only of porn, but I think of like AI and like the future of sexual interactions with tech, so to speak. So like, I almost want to open up a conversation and feel free to do with this as you will, because we could literally talk about this for hours.
Yeah.
But the thing that came to mind was like, what do you see as some of the dangers of sex tech versus the positive opportunities? Because I think sometimes we forget that there's two sides to that coin, right? Like sometimes the conversation is like, ugh, apps and like, you know, Project Melody, like these AI-driven sex porn slash like whatever gratification platforms or profiles. But I'm curious, and like, and I feel like you're the person to answer this, like what are some of the positive opportunities if we think holistically about this tech and we think with like a longer trajectory for like what could happen and how we could better utilize some of this stuff?
To answer the question of what are some of the positive aspects of sex technology, I think that's an amazing question. And guess who tends to ask that question the most?
You, probably.
People who are scared of tech? Me?
Is femmes and women.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's the same question of when someone asks the female entrepreneur, how do you manage motherhood in your career? It's like,
oh, right.
We inherently as femmes immediately understand the harms that can take place. Immediately.
Right.
Men don't ask that. Men don't go, oh, what's the harm? They go, oh, hell yeah. What can we do? This is great. I'm gonna get my rocks off, right?
They're just safe always.
Right. Yeah. And so they're just like, oh yeah, this is, you know, and when I talk to men about it, I just find it funny. And I think it's beautiful explanation of why we need more femmes in tech. We need more femmes with tech equity. We need more femmes who can design the world they want to see as far as technology. But it's a question that women ask. Almost immediately. Yeah. What are the positives? What are the, you know, inherent positives or negatives? Because all I can see is the ways that this can be abusive, that this can be harmful to me, etc. And I think that is such a powerful thing that we are so mindful and incredibly insightful about the harms that could be done in digital space, just like physical space. So to me, you know, the beauty of sex technology is that not only is it going to close the orgasm gap that we have in our world, you know, and the orgasm gap for those listening who don't know, it's just women not orgasming as much as men, right?
They better know by now if they're listening to our podcast.
They're aware.
You know? So that's, but it's true, right? I just like to be reminded, you know, that this is actually a real thing. And so, you know, technology closes that gap. But technology, as far as sex tech, also closes the gap on concepts like fertility, on concepts like birth control, gender reaffirmation, and just simply connection, you know. sex is a great way to connect with people. And so when we think about the entertainment possibilities, it's incredible. When we think about virtual reality, augmented reality, and these different aspects, we can really be bringing people together. But it starts at a fundamental base of empathy and, you know, thoughtfulness as well. Right. And so this is what we're seeing when we do put women in charge of creating the tech they want to see. As we know, which we'll get into the episode today, some of the harms that can come from sex technology period, exactly. But those that can be applied in the sexual sense, we can acknowledge the harms as well. And so it takes organizations like Women of Sex Tech, who I'm a vice president of, to be thought leaders in the space and to want to radically change the space of technology.
What do you feel like is missing from the digital space right now that would make like the lives of sex workers better?
Women having ownership of what the hell they're actually navigating. Sure. Women need money. Women deserve equity. Like, you know, we keep asking, how can we solve all these problems? Well, guess what? Less power for men.
You know? Right.
Like, how about that fundamentally? And then when you say that, people go, oh my God, wow. Huh. Yeah. I never even thought about it that way. And it's like, yeah, imagine if you had not only the educational and socioeconomical resources to just be okay, what if you actually had the resources to design something that you wanted to see in this world? How often does this happen? We're seeing this change with more women in STEM and all these different things, but fundamentally the problem is we're not creating the world that we exist in.
Yeah.
So if we're not creating it, then it may not function. This is coming from a Black woman as well. It may not function to the level that that it would be if you designed it. And so that's not the answer for everything. But I ask like what's missing, I'm like women designing things.
Right.
Because there's several things, even this podcast, I go, oh yeah, that makes so much sense to me. And I love that. And that's what I want to see in the world. And so that's.
Not that I'm one to like quote the Gates very often, but I did watch like sort of peripherally. And then I sat up and was like, oh, this is very interesting. But the is it called My Next Guest, the David Letterman Netflix show where he had Jay-Z on and he talked to Obama. He had Melinda Gates on and I was like, I don't know if I care about this. And then I deeply, deeply did because she said something that hadn't occurred to me. She said, we are designing AI right now that will be used, you know, like that is the foundation for years to come. And it is being built primarily by white men. So there is going to be inherent bias in the, it is an urgent issue to get women and people of color and all different identities involved in the creation of tech because it's going to carry forward and that we're not even thinking about or acknowledging or managing the inherent bias in the tech we're creating right now.
Yeah.
And that was, 100%. It just kind of blew the lid off my head when I thought about that. So
yeah. So Melinda Gates, if you're listening, Women of Sex Tech is in our first round of funding. So please hit us up. If anyone knows Melinda Gates, we definitely need
someone
of that money, girl.
At her.
Okay. But know, one of my favorite things to say is that just like orgasms, algorithms have a bias. Okay. Every single thing we have has a bias. Your orgasm has a bias.
Yeah,
your AI and your technology you use has a bias. And I love to say that because, you know, we don't come, everything we come to, as in, you know, orgasm to, has these back end things that led us to this point. And it's the same with technology and coding as well.
I think a lot about, too, how so much tech is created. And listen, we could, but we won't turn this into an like entire conversation about capitalism. But so much tech is created.
Here we go.
Here I take it every time. But so much tech is created with a very specific, like, how do we make money off of this? How do we exploit this for shareholders, for our investors? Like, what's the fastest way to market? And so much tech, generally speaking, we don't think about the consequences of it. And we're seeing some of those consequences now. I mean, for anyone who's watched Social Dilemma on Netflix, like that to me, I was like, yeah, this is old news. Like, we know that this is what monetizing social media does. And these are the dangers that the folks monetizing those platforms didn't think about. So I guess going back to what you were saying of like forethought of like liability and what are the repercussions of this potentially is like socially probably a more feminine female impulse, but we as a whole need to all be thinking about that. So listen, cis men who listen to this for boners, like think about it.
That's absolutely true. You know, so I love that you touched on that because when you asked me What got you into this, and what made you interested in this? That's what it was.
Yeah.
This constant monetization of not only female bodies, but black female bodies.
Right.
And I just came out, I had a feature in ID Mag for top 100 revolutionary activists alongside, you know, icons like Billy Porter, Kyan Dorisho, freaking Stacey Abrams, T.S. Candy. Oh my God. I was like, okay, I guess that's me.
Yes.
You know, in my manifesto, I said, you know, stop using our bodies for profit. Stop using, we are no longer your slaves. Understand that these companies are exploiting you under capitalism, and there's no ethical relationships under capitalism. And the reality of it is that within the sex worker rights movement, what we're seeing, specifically digitally, is that civilians are so interested in what decriminalization of sex work looks like physically and digitally, because they are more connected and more have more in common now with the sex worker who could be attempting upward mobility due to capitalism than ever before. And so, you know, something else I also say too, that really upsets people, is that guess what, white man, like, you need to step down. That a lot of white men are upholding these capitalistic white supremacist views, and they look to their neighbor and they go, well, how can I change the world, and what can I do to make the world better for those who don't look like me? And the reality is stepping down, giving up your seat, and letting someone else fill it. And so that's why I'm like obsessed with Reddit Bay. Is it Serena's husband?
Oh yeah, Alexis Ohanian.
Oh yes. Yeah. I'm like, I don't even need porn. I'm like, that is my porn. The concept, like, when I'm like, oh, I don't have access to porn, I'm like, I just think of him and like what he says to her when he wakes up in the morning, and I'm like, that makes me come. Like, that, whatever he has, the conversations they have, that's it for me.
See, they should just start an OnlyFans that's just like them talking at breakfast, and him just like,
no, I'm,
you know,
like
worshiping her.
I'm like, I don't know if I want children, but I'm like, a man like that,
we may change your
mind. Maybe having some babies.
Speaking of OnlyFans, I wonder if like if OnlyFans was ran by a woman, if like all of those like practices would have changed after the Bella Thorne scandal.
Oh, Rachel, what a great question. And the reality is that replacing women with men is not always the answer.
Right, you know,
that's really not always the answer. But I love that sometimes feminists are like, well, if a woman was in charge, it's like, we are still navigating capitalism, you know. And one of my favorite things ever to do is, not totally the point, but, you know, the concept of the organization, The Wing. You know, The Wing was an all-feminist female co-working space. And because of, and it, you know, and they blew up for unethical behaviors and all, you know, all these horrific things. Google them, and trust me, DM me, and we can talk shit about it, because I love to talk shit about The Wing. But the point being is
so does Laura. So
yes, it's my favorite sport.
Honey, when I tell you it's like my core, it's so bad of how much joy it gives me. But point being is that replacing women who still have capitalist views is not the answer.
That's
true. But it's still a good ongoing question of, okay, so what does change look like, though, within the hands of female power?
I
mean, it's still an organization like that sold for like a big price when it went public, and touted a lot of bullshit that was ultimately like not going to work in tandem with their bottom line. And they're an aggressive organization. I also remember when you hosted that panel and Gab Alexa like wrote about it. I was here for it, and I was a member at the time. Like, my employer covered my membership, and I thought it would be like, you know, cool. If I'm honest, I just wanted to be bougie like everybody else, and was like,
we all did. We wanted to be
like,
cute.
Don't
we
all
to meet our friends? Like, that was the whole thing.
And feel safe at the same time.
Imagine that.
But you get there, and it's just not that. It's just like overpriced snacks and like dirty pink couches, and you're like, wait a minute, I was sold a lie. And then when I tried to quit, it was so aggressive.
Ugh.
It was so, their policy is. Anyway, we're not going to talk about The Wing anymore.
No,
but
we're not going to, because let me tell you right now, that's a whole podcast episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing we can talk about is this conversation about ethical porn with female directors and female producers and female ownership. We all know that that's not always true. I'm not going to name the name that I'm really wanting to name, because I'm going to keep it real cute and professional right now. But the point being is that female ownership does not necessarily equate to ethical behavior. And so we really at the ground have a big responsibility of education and empathy that we need to educate everyone on. So,
right. Absolutely.
Thank you for guiding the conversation on our podcast. You're really great at like staying on topic where I'm like, let's talk about the way.
No, you don't understand. You don't understand how much I want to talk about that. I have
let's
to
talk about how they don't pay their panelists, but they charge you. Right. Anyway, so let's go into the ethical porn conversation. Like, how would you define ethical porn? We have our answer, but I would be curious to hear yours.
Again, another great question. I think the statement ethical porn is an oxymoron. I think the concept together actually don't even really exist. I think the concept of ethical behavior is an ongoing, consistent, constant journey. It is never, ever, ever a destination. I think it's really problematic when people attempt to attach this concept of ethical behavior to something as fickle and subjective as pornography. And that the concept of ethics does not stop and end, the concept of ethics does not start and end when you press play and you press stop from an entertainment media. It begins and ends with labor rights. Working, you know, how people are treated on set, you know, how people can actually make money, you know, is this an actual profession that gives you a livelihood? All of those things to me embody the concept of ethical porn. And so to most people's best understanding, they really aren't understanding what ethical porn means. The most ethical porn I've seen, though, let me actually take that back. The most ethical porn I've seen is when porn performers are selling directly to the consumer and they are getting all of their profits and they're making all of their money themselves. But again, that's very slim slice of the pie when we think about the entire porn industry. And so the concept of ethical porn, I would assume, is kind of this idea that it doesn't portray harmful messaging and harmful intentions like most of our mainstream porn does on these tube sites. But I personally, within my journey of sex tech, would love to move away from this idea of ethical porn. But I'm also understanding that it has to be labeled that way because of our current world we live in. That we have so much unethical porn that we have to push the concept of ethical porn. And so I see it a lot. I think my disdain for the concept of ethical porn comes from Erica Lust Productions, a production company who claims to be this independent indie ethical porn production company, when in reality they make tens of millions a year. They are not a small indie company, and they are not ethical within their labor practices. And so my concern from the ethical porn label comes from platforms that use it for marketing and use it to have like almost this pink white feminism. And they use it for all this gain. But in reality, they're not actually practicing these things. And so that's the concerning thing that I'm seeing within the ethical porn labeling. But to answer your question, I would say ethical porn is when you're buying directly from a porn performer, and you, to your best understanding, they are having safe labor practices.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that like ethical porn is not a destination, but this like amorphous, like complicated, like, I mean, essentially, like, that's what we have learned in making this podcast, because we have been like, okay, here's a platform we can trust, or here's a, you know, here's a producer, and it's a constantly moving needle, or a like, oh shit, like this happened, how did this company handle it, like how did such and such, and we're big fans of scene porn, so it's hard. Like, we have fully been like, okay, like, more and more we're just featuring performers on, like, ManyVids profiles. Or if we do talk about Pornhub, which we never really did in a positive light, we've never been a supporter there. But the only time we've been like, okay, here's the exception, or here's how you could potentially consume a site like Pornhub ethically, is just directly through performers. That's the only way.
Right.
But we are even like, why don't those performers just leave Pornhub and just go to a different outlet,
meaning verified channels.
Yeah.
Another great question. So the reality is that we are all trying to survive under capitalism.
Right.
And while we all fucking dislike a lot of the things that Pornhub's doing, we cannot not acknowledge the fact that they actually are giving a lot of performers livelihood. They actually are paying a lot of performers, you know. So it's kind of this, as women, you know, we have to always navigate this. There's no ethical, there's no ethical relationships under capitalism, right? So we're constantly juggling the harms and the goods of everything. And when you have such a huge powerhouse as I even say the concept of Pornhub that has a third of internet traffic, it is just to be, what is ethical, right? When they are a capitalist platform. And so we have to be actively critiquing them, but at the same time, when we talk about performers and we talk about, well, why don't you just do this? Well, baby, I gotta eat. And so as civilians, we do have this power to go, well, I'm gonna leave this job and go to that job because I'm treated better. But when you're in an industry that is so heavily stigmatized and has so much shame attached to it, it's difficult to make those decisions in that way, in that thought process.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like applying pressure to someone to, like, shop quote-unquote ethical, like stop shopping at Walmart or Amazon. But it's like, if it's the cheapest thing, it creates like the quote-unquote market imperative of like, if you're broke and you're not being compensated for your labor well enough, you're forced to then indulge in these companies that exploit labor, and it's just a cycle
keeps it going.
So we talk a lot about, too, and I'd actually be curious to get your thoughts on this, and maybe we should probably transition to deepfakes right after this, but last question for you.
Maybe one day.
What do you think would need to happen, and it may never happen under a capitalist system, but, like, sites like Pornhub, it's like, why can't and why don't they, and what pressure would need to be applied to make them just require that every account that posts any content be verified? If all you need to do to verify your account is show your ID, do they really need that much unverified content floating around for their traffic? Or is it that we just, like, the market needs to shift to paying for content on Pornhub? Like, is there a world or a reason that you see that Pornhub, like, refuses to just require verified profiles?
Yeah, so two sides to that. One is white men upholding capitalism, and then two is the stigma attached to the sex trade, period. And
people
so
don't
when
want
we
their
talk about
information out there.
Yeah, and it's not even a matter of, it's not like, oh, well, I just don't want my information. It's like, well, my life can be in danger if my information is shared, right? So we talk about privacy and security. And so on the first flip of the coin, we have, you know, white men upholding capitalism. And so this also means upholding things like patriarchy, misogyny, white supremacy, etc., which results in the want and control of women's bodies and the conversation around consent, the conversation around actually paying a woman to perform this sexual act that historically we have completely shamed and hurt women who did this, right? So one, there's not respect and there's not an appreciation and a value for the safety of women navigating the porn industry. Fundamentally, that's the issue of why verified profiles aren't happening, because not only does Pornhub maybe not even care enough, but as a society, like the structures are not even in place for that to be a concept to even to happen. And so on the other side, we can talk about the decriminalization of sex workers and why that can prevent sites as big as Pornhub from having a consistent verification process. And so verification tends to mean some sort of identifying you, and most performers have a performing name and a legal name. Not everyone has the privilege of connecting the two, and there's a reason why we go by pseudonyms. There's a reason I go by a pseudonym. I was just put on a sex worker watch terrorist list with my name, okay? So these things are not to be taken lightly. And so we as users want to have verified content because we want to know what we're navigating. But I think in the sex industry, there's a lot more on the back end of verifying people that most civilians don't even think about. Civilians go, well, I had to give my ID and a credit card. No fucking problem. Here's my information. And sex workers have to go, okay, what's the risk reward here? And so I'm actually working on a website called Deepfakes. I mean, oh my God, not Deepfakes. That's so crazy. I'm working on a website called Deep Thoughts.
Okay, cool. Much better.
Great. I'm so, like, again, all cylinders. I'm like,
I was like, I don't know how to tell you this, but the URL is taken.
No, it already exists. Oh, how horrible is that? No, so I'm creating a website called Deep Thoughts. It's a mutually beneficial dating app of buying and selling attention. We will be sex worker friendly, etc. And we're working on a third party verification concept. And that's something that is incredibly difficult and intricate to navigate because, you know, we feel very protective over our identities, especially navigating any space that deals with sexuality. And so, yeah, that's my big,
awesome,
big answer.
Yeah. Cool. That sounds like an incredible endeavor. Deep
thought. No, everyone always asks. Yeah, deep thought. Everyone like asks me questions, and most of the time my answers tend to be give women money and defund big technology. Those tend to be my biggest answer.
Well, crazy idea, Rachel.
Yeah.
Should we take a break and then come back and talk about deepfakes and incorporate the video in the conversation? Should we do it that way?
Yeah, that's a good idea. We've been chatting.
No, we have been.
People might have to pee, you know?
All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about deepfakes.
Cool.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We're back to talk about deepfakes, the scariest shit that I have stared unflinchingly into in a long time. And I spent a lot of time like staring at strangers' assholes, but this was really,
this was really something. Yeah. I'm so glad that you recommended this, SX, because it's something that I've been like fascinated by. And, you know, obviously one of the points of this podcast is to find, you know, porn that everyone can feel good about watching. And this is just, this isn't it. This is not it. So it's a this is a little bit of a different episode, but we just felt like we had to talk about it because it is something that like, as technology is advancing, I feel like the legality of it hasn't really kept up. Like, how do you fight against your likeness being put on a performer's body, you know?
Mm-hmm. And how does that performer fight against somebody else's face being put on their body? So for those who don't know,
yes,
deepfakes are like, to summarize, in the porn world, you've probably stumbled across a video of Emma Watson's face on someone else's body, or like a celebrity's face being manipulated into a different video. So this is a technique that's come out of machine learning.
Yeah.
From an article in The Guardian, the use of this machine learning technique was mostly limited to the AI research community until late 2017, when a Reddit user who went by the moniker Deepfakes, a portmanteau of deep learning and fake, started posting digitally altered pornographic videos. So it's basically an algorithm that this guy created that learns to overlay a face over an existing video and sort of manipulate that. Those, like, it uses tons of images and creates like, oh, it's Emma Watson's face like moving and doing stuff while we're watching someone else get fucked. Even the most like basic videos of this with, you know, it uses a open source code that Google has available publicly. The reason this is scary is that anyone who has like a rough knowledge of this code can spend a few days making these videos.
Right. And it's been used for like revenge porn, fake news, you know, hoaxes, things like that.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying.
Yeah. The immediate consequence is that we're seeing movie stars obviously not giving consent or with no knowledge, having their faces appear on existing videos that the mm-hmm. porn stars with no consent or existing knowledge are then like bastardized and pirated. Mm-hmm. The larger fear is manipulated political videos of such and such politician like doing something horrible, releasing like a few days before an election. Or just in general, us in the future when this technology gets better, having no way to tell the difference between what's real and what's fake in terms of like actual videos of people speaking.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I was like, what am I going to talk about on the podcast? So in case you all haven't realized this yet, I'm a complete nerd. Okay. People are like, oh, sex technology, that's so fun and edgy. And I'm like, oh, is it? Well, let me tell you about, let me tell you about all these things that are not sexy. You think it's about porn? Well, let me tell you all these political things that are going to just make you angry and that I'm angry about, right? That's my MO of everything. Like I'll be in a freaking orgy and in the corner like, well, actually, you know.
We're the same that way. I host a porn podcast and I'm like, but let's talk about the economic structures at play. Like, let's talk about capitalism. Want to take it there. Yeah.
No, literally. So I was like, okay, so what are we going to talk about? And you all were like, mutual masturbation. Yeah. I was like, I am such a nerdy, prudy girl.
Oh,
I'm
like, I can't even.
No, so I was like, what can we talk about that sex tech and, you know, emerging all the things you're talking about in pornography, deep fakes? It's a major concern of mine and a major concern of us within the sex tech industry and the bad actors that we have within it. Mm-hmm. So a quick little story. I did my first introduction to the sex tech world was in 2018 in a sex technology hackathon by the brilliant Bryony Cole, who is the founder of the Sex Edge School and the Future of Sex podcast. Mm. So check that out if y'all love future of sex conversations. And she had a hackathon, and it was pretty female heavy. We had a lot of women, but you know, we had some male teams or whatever, and we were all just like, we had to do this project. So this is actually where my deep thoughts concept and mutually beneficial website founded by women came along, but also this other man presented this app. And so the app was a 3D blowjob app. And essentially what you would do is you would take a 360 picture, right, of a person, and then you could apply them giving fellatio to somebody. And I don't know why I said fellatio, like that's like fellatio.
Give a fellatio. I love a technical somebody. Term. I love a technical
eating
term.
Eating something or someone out. So and immediately all the women were like, No, absolutely not.
No.
Right? And this is kind of what I mean by that knee-jerk reaction of how women question things versus men. Because women were like, no. Like, what, you about to do that to my head right now? Like, what do you mean? And the men were like, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And so I love that you broke down, you know, this came along the scene in late 2017 by someone who was in the industry. And this also particularly came up on Reddit. Just a quick few definitions to say that a deep fake is a person in an existing image or video that is replaced with someone else's likeliness. And that's another important word to use, likeliness, because we're not just saying an image of some person. We're saying someone's literal personality, concept, character, their likeliness, why people like them in the first place.
Right.
And so, first of all, there is no such thing as a consensual deep fake. Because as of now, the definition of deep fakes is without someone's consent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so they are something that promotes misinformation and lack of empathy in digital space. And so you're not most of the time, if you're engaging in a deep fake, you're not thinking about how this can actually impact the other person. And it's a double-edged sword. So it's the sword of one, the person, the celebrity or other person. It can be a celebrity. For today, we'll talk about celebrities within porn. But as you mentioned, this can be politicians. This can be a wide spectrum of anything. And then you also forget the actual persons whose body it is, right?
Right.
So there's two levels of non-consensual behavior that's happening. And so we call this a very bad acting within sex technology.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, a few more things to note before we really get into the conversation is that we've had concepts of Photoshop,
right.
But this new thing of videos being spread around is more difficult for people to critically think about. We're more likely to see something moving and go, oh, that's real. So when we think about, for example, fake news and the election being rigged on Facebook and all these platforms, we're finding how really these platforms ethically behave. So Facebook has stated that they would not remove deepfakes from their platform. And Pornhub has said that they will remove deepfake porn from their platform. But to this day, if you go and you search it, you will have results for deep porn.
Yeah, you can deepfake. Find so much.
Yeah. And so it goes into this conversation of consent and also women monetizing their sexuality and also the rise of the incel culture that we have within our culture. So, yeah, so that's that. And the last thing, too, that was really relevant that really touched on what you were talking about, Laura, is a model named Emily Ratajkowski.
Yeah, we all know who she is, but she has a hard name to say.
Yes. And so she is like, you know, one of the top supermodels, fucking beautiful woman. Amazing. And there was a recent article in The Cut that talked about owning my own image, right? And how she was being sued for an image that a paparazzi took of her because they said that it was their image and she didn't have the rights to use it. So when we talk about deep fakes, we talk about consent, we talk about money, monetization of someone's body, and we also just talk about control over females' bodies. Who has control and who wants control and who is willing to fight, you know, to have control. So boom, those are my intro topics of why I want to talk about deep fakes and how it intersects and how it's so important for us to get into.
Right. And important to note that like all of these videos are of women. Like it's harmful specifically to women. Like you're not seeing deep fake videos of like, you know, Leonardo
Jude
DiCaprio.
Law.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like it is, and it's like specifically women who kind of have like, you know, I guess like a, like it's like Emma Watson, you know, like the, like not someone who's like dripping in sexuality.
I mean, someone who is actually like open about her sexuality and quite progressive and talking about her orgasm and having a spirited conversation and about destigmatizing sexuality. So it feels like all the more undermining that she would be like one of the most famous examples.
Yeah.
We looked at a video of Emma Watson and we also looked at a video of Priyanka Chopra as examples. And all I could think about watching the Emma Watson one was like, this is a person who auditioned for a movie at 7 years old.
Yeah.
And if you had like told her, I mean, I don't know if she's actually seven. I'm not enough of a Harry Potter nerd to know the details, but like when you think about a child auditioning for an acting role, if you had said to that child or that child's parents, like, you're signing up for a level of celebrity that means somebody is someday going to manipulate your face and put it on somebody else's body. Like, would the parents be like, actually, it's a no. Like, I imagine the millions of dollars, whatever, like, someone in their head is arguing, like, well, if you're a public figure, shit happens. But I hate that attitude because we're all individuals and we should all be granted consent. And particularly, as you were saying, SX, of like women's bodies and images being of our own ownership and control.
100%. And we're talking about celebrities that are being, you know, copied within deep fakes, but we can also talk about revenge porn and the deep, deep harm that it has for civilians.
Yes.
There was, and just the intersections between deep fakes, which is a psychological method to manipulate someone in digital space using someone else's images, right? And we can also talk about, you know, facial recognition and artificial intelligence and how that's often used, you know, to target women. And that it was very important that we noted it came onto the internet in 2017 on Reddit to target female celebrities.
Yes.
This is important when you talk about the creation of concepts and social concepts like this and how we don't respect celebrities' bodies. We don't respect femme bodies. We don't respect black bodies. We do not respect it. And so It's very interesting. And I also think about, and this is also another nerdy comment, the intersections of deep fakes and holographics technology that's about to come up. You know, we all are like, I want to see Tupac at the concert. But what's going to happen when we have Madonna sucking, I mean, not Madonna. Well, yeah, maybe Madonna. When we have Madonna sucking dick on stage in Berlin, and we think it's really cool and fun. Something else I've seen within the deep fakes is the Cardi B video. I saw a lot of deep fakes for the WAP video.
Yeah.
Did you all see that with Kylie Jenner? And people were swapping out their faces with Kylie Jenner to attempt to reclaim how they should have been in the video rather than Kylie Jenner. And so we saw this interesting deep fake. And WAP, I would say it's sexuality, right? We're talking about wet ass pussy, right? Yeah. The WAP song.
I don't think that's a stretch.
You know what I mean? It's not a stretch. Yeah. So I found that interesting as civilians deep faking themselves to this video. And I'm thinking, oh shit, like what is the cultural intersection of how this technology is used? And how are we going to, you know, detach and split the realities of what is good and bad when we talk about deep fakes? Because it's not all inherently negative. You know, there were a lot of Black women who, I believe the funniest one was Viola Davis, who they deep faked her into the WAP video. And so the layers of the meme were so deep.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. But in that sense, we're all, this is hilarious. This is so fun. Right. This is so, so we have to acknowledge the what connection means in digital space and how intersectional it is and how meaning and intention absolutely do play a part in the impact.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's worth noting, just to nerd out one more time, that the it just feels like a funny coincidence that the technology used to do this is called generative adversarial networks, or GANs, in which two machine learning models duke it out. One ML model trains on a data set and then creates video forgeries while the other attempts to detect the forgeries. I just think it's like too perfect of a coincidence that it's called generative adversarial networks that create this technology. We don't have to like espouse on that very long, but I just was like, that's so silly. We literally call it like enemy tech, and then it creates this, you know?
Yeah, and when we think about, like, I think it's really interesting, too, from, like, the emotional side, like, what people get, the satisfaction that people get from watching deep pornography, and how I find it fascinating. It's like, you know, do you really want to watch Joe Biden jacking off? Like, what is it about these two connections, these two seemingly pleasurable connections to you that make this ultimate boom? You know, why is it that you need to see this face performing this act to feel not only maybe even powerful, but in pleasure? What does that mean as us, as a society?
It doesn't seem like deepfakes are being created for pleasure, but almost for humiliation.
Or for punishment.
For punishment.
Which is a very, which is a really common public relationship with celebrity. Like, I'm also just in a whole different way fascinated with celebrity and the toxicity of the way that culture and with the society as a whole engages with public figures. And if you think about, like, someone like Britney Spears, who was touted as a virgin and who you like publicly deflowered and then destroyed, like just the way that we punish particularly women by like holding them to a certain standard and holding them to a certain contradiction of the like whore Madonna complex, and then creating fake videos so we can like live out this punishment fantasy, this like, it's just a very bizarre like moral circus, like, you know,
let me tell you right now, there's a 12-year-old right now creating deep fake revenge porn.
You're right.
I know for a fact there is.
Yeah.
And so when we talk, we have to talk about these things, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
this is part of the mystifying concept within sex technology. Yeah. And it's difficult. You know, I'm going to challenge every single person listening to this podcast. Don't go Google deep fake porn.
Yeah.
You know what it is.
Don't.
Yeah.
You know, just so don't. I think it's, and it's hard for us too, right? Because we as humans crave humiliation. We crave to see the pain of others, period. And so when you think about digital space, I'm gonna keep it real. It's true. We love it. Why do we get on social media? We want to, we love, we get as much dopamine, if not more, from pain as we do pleasure. So the concept of that does exist. And this goes back down to education and all these other things. But we as humans, it doesn't surprise me that this exists. But I challenge you all to rebuke it in the name of the Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I felt uncomfortable thinking about this episode ahead of time because I was like, we sort of followed our own format of being like, we chose these videos, but like, I don't want people to watch them. Like, yeah. I don't want them to give their clicks to any of this shit because, you know, that monetization, like that traffic contributes to why this shit exists.
It's non-consensual and it's harmful.
Yeah.
That being said, should we talk about them?
Sure. I mean, I think we can talk about like some of the problem areas.
Yes.
And I think just leave out the platform.
Right. Right.
Because fuck them.
Right. Exactly.
But yeah, so we looked at a Emma Watson and a Priyanka Chopra.
Yeah.
It's not even right to say like their videos featuring them because they're not. Right. But like those were the celebrities featured. I think the Priyanka Chopra was, I think, a bastardized. It wasn't even Bang Bros. It was stamped with Bang Bros, but then at the top she named a different platform. So I was like, this is thrice pirated.
Oh, really?
Like, I think she said a different platform and I was like, where even are we? Because she was like, I only do it for such and such, such and such. And I didn't know what she was naming. And I thought it was a director or a porn house or something.
Mm, yeah.
But yeah, basically we see a performer who we're told to believe is Priyanka Chopra. Feels fitting that she puts on like an America bikini.
Yeah.
Like there's something there that I was like, oh boy. Like,
yeah, people really want to.
Playing to their audience.
Yeah.
You know?
And a trucker hat. And I think that we're like at some sort of like clothing designer's home. She does an ass parade. There's some more like objectifying where he puts like solo cups on her ass while she walks around.
I will say, I don't actually know if it was a clothing designer's home so much as like a porn house where they're like, this is stuff you can put on.
Right. But
we've seen that before.
But in the background of like during the sex act, like there was like a gown on like a mannequin. I don't know if anyone else noticed that. I'm always looking at like, I have to look at the set.
It was like a nice gown.
Yeah. I need to look at the set. Like I need to know where we are, what's going on.
The production design or lack thereof.
I need to know. So that really, I was like, then I was very confused.
I feel like I like to also talk about too, like this idea of like, you know, I've met a lot of sex workers and I've met a lot of models and actresses and all these different people. And I think it's hilarious the deep intersections between sex work and acting and modeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's interesting to me because, and we can touch on the Bella Thorne, that people who are in the public eye, who were acting and doing, you know, such invasive things, really, people feel that they have the right to see them in sexual behavior as well.
Yeah.
They feel that, oh, I get so much pleasure from your acting and your creativity that I also deserve to see you be sexually engaging as well. Right. And this is also concepts upheld by patriarchy. I mean, come on, you know, you've seen, you know, Nicole Kidman and all these different actresses that have these incredibly sexual scenes and incredibly sexual behaviors within their work, and people feel entitled to then take it to another level of engagement and interaction. And this is part of the disassociation that we have within digital space and how you talked about the social dilemma, you know, and how these manipulations and addiction happen and how they manifest as well.
It's also something like we even grapple with as podcast hosts. Like, we're launching a Patreon soon, and yes, that is a plug. but like, we're going to include like pictures of ourselves, and I constantly am like, which thing am I pushing against? You know, like, am I posting this because I enjoy it? Am I, like, when I think about my Instagram presence, there's a lot of thirst traps on there. There's a lot of like, I look hot in this, and I have to grapple with my own, like, well, am I giving into the patriarchy or am I pushing against the morality that says I'm not allowed to be a sexual being because I'm intelligent and all these other things? And it's just like, it's a battle you have to have with yourself. And it's so, for women in particular, like so heavily like tied into currencies that are pervasive in like every aspect of our culture. So there's like really no line there. I constantly think about it and I'm like, yeah, today I'm aware that I'm posting my ass and it looks good and I'm gonna get likes and that's gonna give me a dopamine hit and that's what I'm here for. At the same time, I'm like exercising my sexual freedom, but today it's about the likes, you know. It's hard to like draw lines and like rules about your own, about yourself even. So it's incredibly complicated when that push and pull includes like a massive audience that's sort of like demanding sexuality of you, you know?
Absolutely. I know. I just watched The Diary of a Teenage Drama Queen last night with Lindsay Lohan. Oh my God. And when I tell you, Lindsay Lohan, first of all, this bitch can act her ass off, okay? Like, she's the best actress ever. But, you know, I'm watching this movie, and I mean, her character is supposed to be all of 15, and every single thing is hugging her tits. Basically, the skirt is basically under her ass, and it's like, okay, but we've been taughting this sexuality things for so long. Mm-hmm. And so what are we... Yeah, it's like, so what are we fighting against? Are we just saying, oh yeah, I love it? Or, you know, I get it. I don't know what that point to bring that up was, but the point is that we, you know, we sexualize people from very early stages, right? And so with a disassociation, manipulation, and addiction that happens within digital space, we have certain outcomes like deep fake pornography. Deep fake revenge porn, really.
We did kind of derail the video conversation. I think that was sort of purposefully on my part, because I was like, I don't really want to talk about it. Like, want to make it sound tantalizing in a way that, like, people are like, oh, but I should go check it out. Like, it's two different videos.
No, it's not tantalizing.
I don't think your viewers are like, this is something tantalizing I want to see.
It's not. It's like the sex act in itself isn't even good. They're like, he touches her clit for maybe 2 seconds. He plunges his fingers into her asshole with no lube. It doesn't look great. Like,
well, it's a Bang Bros video that they threw.
Exactly.
Priyanka Chopra's. I mean, what I just found it deeply disturbing. And at times you were like, oh, I can see where Priyanka's face was like superimposed on someone else's face.
Right.
Particularly when she turns to the side, because like her skin color changes. They clearly like... It was a whiter woman that was featured in the original video, and it looks like fake tanner is rubbing off on the side of her face because they have like superimposed someone else's face on this woman's body.
Right.
And like, that's a fucking weird thing to even think about, that they chose like a lighter skinned brown woman to like marry with this Priyanka's face. So it's just, I just found it deeply disturbing and just like such a... It just was so blatantly like touting what's wrong with America.
Right.
While
and
this
like
woman
both
is like getting fucked in an America bikini.
And both of these videos, it's like, it's disturbing that like we're people are coming to see like the likeness of someone else on this face, but then it's not even about their pleasure. You know?
No.
Like, it's just about them being used. Like in both of these videos, the person who's supposed to be the celebrity, the performer, is not getting much pleasure at all. It's never about their orgasm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really upsetting.
I mean, the Emma Watson one is like 2 minutes long.
Right.
And it's not as, the tech is like weaker, it feels like. Like,
yeah.
It's more obviously a fake. Because like when she looks down, she like becomes a, like anytime she moves her head at all.
Right.
But it's just 2 minutes of like Ariel getting fucked.
Right.
So it's like not even a worthy porn in its own
right. It's very boring sex. It's very boring sex, and her, it's freaky. It's freaky to look at.
I think the bottom line is like this is just a problem area, and like we need to wander into these territories to talk about them.
Absolutely.
But yeah, not for me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the beauty of having this conversation, I know it's not your typical conversation, and I know we always want to see sunshine at the end of the tunnel, but the reality is that not talking about conversation, talking about sex tech, talking about pornography means talking about what shouldn't be created and talking about what shouldn't exist. We do not have to just see things and go, well, it's here, so it must be.
Right.
We must accept it. I don't think that's true. And so when we are saying that we're innovators, or we're saying we're trying to create or design, we have to think about what that actually means inherently. And not everything should be created or designed is part of the point.
Absolutely.
Deep fake conversation.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And if you watch this porn, I think you need to have a really long conversation with yourself, listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
About why.
Well, shall we leave it there?
I think so.
I mean, I could literally talk for hours with you, SX. I'm like, please come co-host our podcast with us.
I need to get on my own. I need to.
Yeah, you're busy. You got plenty
on
your plate.
Own shit.
But speaking of, is there anything you want to plug before we wrap up?
Oh yes, absolutely. I am opening up, we are opening up membership for Women of Sex Technology this fall, winter. We are very anti-capitalist work culture, so we will be opening up sometime this year. And it is a community of femmes working within the sex tech industry. So feel free to ask me any questions you have about that. I am also the host of my own podcast called The Thought Leader Pod. That is T-H-O-T Leader Pod. I am coming out with new episodes very soon called Good Pussy, Good Politics, where I discuss the intersections of my work within the sex worker lives, the sex worker rights movement and the Black Lives Matter movement and the actions that I've taken over coronavirus. I'm also the host of a documentary called Corona Thoughts, which we are in production of now, and just working on how the sex industry has been impacted by COVID-19. What else? I have like other gems to drop.
You could drop your social handles.
Yeah, where can our listeners find you?
All of my socials are at SXNOIR. So that is my name. Pronouns she and her. And yeah, you can find me there. So I'm doing a lot with the Black Sex Worker Liberation March. I recently organized the largest sex worker-led march in New York City in history.
It was amazing.
It's been great. Yeah, that was something really impactful and important. So check all that political stuff out. And we also are actively working against the Earn It Act. So yes. If you are understanding what the Earn It Act is, it is an act that is attempting to end encryption under the manipulation of child exploitative material. And so if you all are interested in any legislation that impacts the sexuality industry, please reach out to me. It is surviveearnit.com. And I believe that's it. That's it. Check me out. I love y'all so much. Always accepting tips on my Venmo, which is at SXBRAT. Yeah, that's me. Cool. Leave it to Amazing. A whore to plug some money.
I know.
Oh,
I
mean, you have to.
That's good. I mean,
you
absolutely.
Have to. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
Truly, it is our honor. We've been fans since we met you at the at Gab's Sex and Cannabis Little Secret
panel.
It was super fun. Yeah.
It was great.
She was one of our first guests, the loveliest. So truly, thank you for joining us. This was
means a lot.
Fantastic conversation, and I hope very educational and thrilling for our audience as well. Thanks for listening to Girls on Porn. You can find us on Instagram at Girls on Pern. That's porn without the O because fuck Instagram. On Twitter at GOP the Podcast. On our website, girlsonporn.com. And maybe by the time this episode comes out, look for us on Patreon.
Yeah. Patreon.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show if you haven't already.
If you give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, feel free to drop your Instagram handle and we'll tag it and thank you, expressing our abundant gratitude.
This has been Girls on Porn, the only GOP that's actually good.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.